has already been said, we're very thankful for the presence of each, and we're indeed thankful for the opportunity to come to the Lord's house at the beginning of the week to worship Him. There were two friends. One had made some considerable effort and some sacrifices along the way, and to show and to help another. And when the one that had received the favor had thanked the other one for the help that they were had been given, the response was, "What are friends for?" And so often we look at our friendships in a way that maybe we don't give it the respect or the attention that we should at times. But we all, and through our lives, have opportunities to meet people. We have acquaintances. But some of those we build on a relationship and have friendships that are lasting. But I think also we have friendships that we need to be careful with. And some of those things I'd like to talk about this morning. But you know, there are times when there are those of us that go to college, we leave home, we have new acquaintances, we start new jobs or move into new cities or towns. Once again, we have new acquaintances. And as we embark upon those new surroundings, we also develop friendships along the way. And it is very important that we recognize that there can be true friendships, but there can also be what I'll term as false friendships. This morning I'd like to consider this term friendship and how we apply it in our lives and how we look at friendships, whether they're true or they're false, and some of the thoughts about those, but also some verses to use. But as an opening reading, I'd like to look at 1 Samuel. It's in the 18th chapter. We have a situation here of two individuals that are probably one of the closest friendships that we'll find in the Bible. The friendship between Jonathan and later the king of Israel, David himself. In the opening four verses it says, "And it came to pass, when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David. And Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And Saul took him that day, and would let him go no more home to his father's house. Then Jonathan and David, they made a covenant, because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him and gave it to David, and his garments even to his sword and to his bow and to his girdle." This relationship was about as tight as you could hope for. Jonathan, being the king's son, heir to that throne, and yet he looked at David. And later we'll find out that he recognized that David would be that one that would be the king of Israel, not himself. And yet it didn't deter from the friendship that bound them together. This morning, before we go into the study, though, and look at a few things concerning friendship, we have a great privilege and a great opportunity to go to God in a word of prayer. There's been a brother selected that will lead our hearts at this time. Number 230 will be the song of invitation. 230. Friends come, friends go, but a true friend is there to watch you grow. A very short poem, one that I guess from simplicity is about as simple as you can get, but it's perfectly stated. A true friend is one that isn't today and tomorrow is gone. A true friendship is one that is developed over a period of time and withstands the things that come along and may change our lives as we mature and as we grow older. There are friendships that we had when we were in high school that we find out that we don't have those same friendships when we're in college. We don't have those same friendships when we graduate from college and embark upon our future employment. We find out that as times change, our acquaintances, our priorities in life change, and because of those changes, our friendships also change. Our values also grow and are strengthened by time. And as this happens, our friendships, the things that we had in common with one another, those things aren't in common anymore. And we find that there are things that are more important in life. I realize that so much could be said about friendships and friends, and I've just selected a small portion. And I've tried to look at some things that might be more applicable to those that are in college or those that have taken on new jobs or moved into different areas, but still I think they're very applicable to our lives every day because we have opportunities to meet people and to become acquainted with people and associate with people in different ways. There was an essay written that was called Spiritual Friendship, and it insisted, as you read through the essay, that we need to test our friendships by using the scriptures. And I think that comment is very important because the scriptures direct us in what's important in life. I never gave really a lot of thought to this particular example or this comment too much when I was in my youth. I didn't think about friendships from the standpoint of trying to evaluate them for the scripture. And you know, I think back upon it when I was in my youth, my parents, they would always encourage us to bring our friends to the house. You know, wherever we went, they always said, come on back and I'll have some sandwiches ready or something, some food for you, or just hang out and play some games here at the house. And, you know, I never realized at the time that it was their way to evaluate our friends, our acquaintances, our associations, so that they had an idea to see who we're running with. If they're people that will encourage us in our lives and help us to develop in our lives, or if we're running with a crowd that would be detrimental to our spiritual well-being. And you know, as Terry and I had our children and become parents, well, we practiced the same thing. We always encouraged the girls to come over to the house, to bring their friends there, so we could see who they were friends with. And we could evaluate those things and kind of direct things without being that dogmatic parent, but we could encourage them with a love and understanding. You know, in Proverbs, the 13th chapter and verse 20, it says, he that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. It's so important that we pay attention to who we befriend in this life. And recognize the fact that our friendships can be detrimental as well as positive friendships. To test our friendships based on the scripture is an important thing that we do. And yet, we don't think about that. It's almost subconsciously that we look at individuals from common goals or common objectives in life, the things that are similar between individuals, and we develop our friendships on that. And if the scriptures are strong within us, that's part of our selection process. who I want to be befriend or who I'd like to be around. You know, our society offers enticements that are alluring. And then you couple that with a companion that's not worried about pleasing God and is looking more at self-satisfaction and those pleasures of this world. And all of a sudden you have a formula for failure, a formula for trouble. Well, I'd like to point out that there are three types of friendships that we need to be aware of. One is carnal. One is worldly. And one is spiritual. You know, only the spiritual friendship represents a true form of friendship. Carnal and worldly friendships, they're not real friendships. Those are false friendships. Those things that are those individuals that we look at, and the way in which we can distinguish true from false is what the backing is. What they're, if an individual or a friend jointly shares in those common goals of serving God and building one up and serving our neighbors, recognizing the higher goal of life and not those things that are just a pleasure or those things that we desire from a physical standpoint. But you know, as we read accounts such as Mark, the 12th chapter, we see that in accounts like this, that it's very important that we recognize, just like the scribes asked of Jesus, the most important elements or the most important commandment. And you know, Jesus responded by, you love God and you love your neighbor. Those are very important factors. And if that's what's instilled within us, the selection of a friend will also share in those same requirements. In other words, we can say that a true friend is based on encouraging each other to love God and to love neighbor and to love one another from the standpoint that we want to see them succeed and go to heaven. I ask a question, what does friendship mean? You know, we all have our friends. But what does that mean? You know, friendship is a stronger form of interpersonal bond. It's not just an association with somebody. It's not the fact that we just go to school together or we go to work together and we're close to them or we know something about them. To develop a friendship's more than that. If we can start a relationship with two individuals more closely aligned on a spiritual level, then we'll be strong. It'll be a stronger foundation for development of a true friendship. Think about Jonathan and David, how strong that bond was. It said their souls were almost one. The fact that they were that close together. You know, however, there are many people, and especially young people, that believe that the highest good is pleasure in this life. Those who pursue pleasure as the highest good will find others who share their pursuit of pleasure and enjoy those things and enjoy being around those that share in those pleasures. But thus, those who share in the pursuit of pleasure enjoy a kind of an appearance of friendship. Is it true friendship? Well, we have friends that are not in the church, don't share the same spiritual beliefs. But when we talk about true friendship, those that share and encourage us to one day reach that heavenly goal, it's different. It's something that's true, and it's a bond that has a deep-seated feeling of trying to encourage one another for our betterment. But you know, many other people, and I call this the worldly type of friendship, you know, they have a common goal, and you find this more in the older generation, but they falsely believe that the highest goods are found in gain, physical gain, monetary gain, acquiring money and success. and accumulating some type of power along their life's journey. And those who value worldly success will form relationships based on those mutual interests. These two enjoy an appearance of friendship, but I don't refer to these as true friendships. You know, in my working experience, there are friendships that are developed over years of working together. It's a bond that's based on things that we work together on to accomplish, and getting to know people and what they do, and appreciation for those abilities. But I've also seen company owners and managers play the friend card or join that lodge that their customer is a member of, just to gain more business or to gain another opportunity in the name of friendship. But yet friendship does not exist. Now, it should be clear that both those who pursue pleasures above all and those who pursue worldly success above all, you know, there's times when they're going to transgress God's law. And thus we think of friendship as including carnal and worldly friendships. You know, if we really think about that, we'll think of many examples where men and women together have sinned because of these friendships. True friendship must never ask a friend to sin. And I think if you just put that in the right way, it'll help us to recognize who our friends are. In one way, we could say that a friend is a guardian of love, or even the guardian of the soul itself. In Romans, the 14th chapter and verse 13, it says, "No man put a stumbling block or an occasion to fall in his brother's way." And it's so true that if we're truly a friend, we don't want to see our friend fall. We don't want to see that other one stumble. We don't want to do anything that holds him back from achieving that ultimate goal of heaven one day. The problem with carnal friendship is not that friends enjoy pleasure together. You know, pleasure is a legitimate good, and it has its proper place, and pleasure in no way is sin. But the problem with carnal friendship is that the friends place the good of pleasure ahead of either the love of God or the love of neighbors. And so we ask, you know, where's the influence? Which is going to have the greatest influence? The love we have for God, the love we have for our neighbors, or to satisfy our pleasures? Have you ever had an occasion where you've purchased tickets to go to a play or a ball game, and you have a friend call and say, "Hey, I need some help." Now you have a conflict. What do I do? "Or I would really like for you to come over. I need to talk to you." And you think, "Well, I've made this investment and I'm planning on going. I've made plans." But you know, that's a sacrifice we make for a true friend. Those are far less important than what a true friend has asked of us. He's asked a moment of our time, and this is where our sacrifices come into play. This is where we look at what we can do for another. You know, there are inventions like Facebook and MeSpace. People get so wrapped up in gossip with our 10,000 unreal friends, and keeping up with our neighbors, and having real relationships, and doing real things with real people is secondary to being able to play on a computer. In James 4:4, it says, "Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is an enemy of God." And we need to recognize that there are things that hold us back from those true relationships and those true friendships. And we need to be careful of those. You know, in Genesis, the second chapter and verse 18, "And the Lord God said, it is not good for man should be alone. I will make him a helpmeet for him." You know, as we read that, God recognized the fact that there's something that was needed, and that man needed someone to talk to reason with, to be able to help and to be helped by, and simply just to be with. There was a companionship that is certainly a human need. In 2 Timothy 4:9, you look at the Apostle Paul. He wrote to Timothy and he encouraged him to come and be with him. He missed that companionship. And then just a little bit later in verse 21, Paul writes, "Do thy diligence and come before winter." The Apostle Paul needed that support. He needed that companionship. And if you realize at that very moment, Paul lost a co-worker. Demas had left him. Demas had departed and had gone back to his first love, had gone back to the world. He had forsaken the Apostle Paul. And so Paul also needed that encouragement from a faithful brother. It is important that we consider who are our companions. In Amos, the third chapter, in verse 3, it says, "Can two walk together except they be agreed?" We want somebody there that we can call a friend, an encourager that has those common goals. And we agree on things. Companions and friends, they should be a complement to our faith and our discipleship. You know, we can easily see friendship that Jesus had with Martha and Mary and Lazarus. When we go back and read the accounts in Luke and also in John. But this was a close relationship. Friends that loved one another. Friends that encouraged one another. Friends that enjoyed each other's company. It was so vital and so important, even in the life of Christ, to have this type of relationship and encouragement. You know, life can be tough, and it's so easy to be discouraged from time to time. At times like this is when a spouse or a friend can be that source of encouragement. You know, I think of Galatians, the 6th chapter and verse 2. It's a spirit of encouragement where it says, "Bear ye one another's burdens." You know, burdens must be dealt with, but burdens can be lightened when a friend's there to encourage, to be close by, to also help in ways in which he can. But we also find in Proverbs, the 27th chapter and verse 10, that a loyal friend is so important. It says there that thy own friend and thy father's friend forsake not. And so we recognize the importance of those friendships that are deep-seated, those that go back years and realize the value of having those type of friends. Yes, loyalty does not mean approval. Just because they're friends doesn't mean that you're going to condone misgivings or misbehavior just because you're a friend. No, Proverbs 1 and 10 says, "If sinners entice thee, consent thou not." So we were there to support and to encourage, not in their sin, not in their misbehavior, but as a friend, to be there to counsel and to help. But there are also times when we need advice along life's way. And we can look to a brother or sister that can help us in those areas. In Proverbs 27 and 9, it says, "Ointment and perfume rejoice the heart. So doth the sweetness of man's friend by hearty counsel." You know, we should look to those individuals that can help us to grow or answer a question or help us through a difficult time by using the scriptures to look at our friendships to look at the things we face, the obstacles that come our way, the burdens we carry, and appreciate that counsel because it helps us, and we recognize that. I believe that true Christian friendship is a form of accountability and trust. A true friendship is had with someone that we can trust, that we can talk to, we can share things with, someone that you can be accountable with, and someone who will not take those personal issues and share with others, but is willing to sit and talk, to reason, to hear, and to be there whenever you are in need. And this can be called trust. You know, trust is the most important factor, I think, in any friendship. But once that trust is broken, many times the friendship is as well. And it's hard to get back where you've started. But you know, you can get back there through forgiveness. And I think this is another very important must in a Christian friendship. You know, in 1 Samuel, the 20th chapter, it talks about that friendship between David and Jonathan. These two men cared deeply for each other, and they trusted, and they confided in one another, and David was running for his life from Jonathan's father. But Jonathan recognized David was innocent. And because of their true friendship, David survived that Saul's assassination and became Israel's great king. You know, friendship also means, as I suggested earlier, giving time. And time in this part of the world, believe it or not, is one of the most precious commodities that we have. It's not money. It's not goods. But it's that giving of time and the sacrifice we make that true Christian friendship involves giving some of it away. And sometimes we need to be very generous with giving away. So if we bought that ticket, if we've made those arrangements to go someplace to share in something, and a friend is in need, then we should be there because that's what is the important factor. That's a change that we need to make in our lives and recognize that we have to be that type of a friend. True friends are also, as I said, need to be willing to forgive because we're not all perfect. Your friends won't always be your favorites. There's sometimes they're going to get on your nerves. There's times when things are not going to go the way you want. And you know, a true friend needs to be willing to forgive and also nurture that relationship, and to be able to recognize how valuable it is. But a true Christian friendship is one in which we can look to the Bible and say, in comparison, we have a true friend here. One that has our interest in mind. In Genesis, the 18th chapter, in verses 17 through 33, you can read about how God is sharing his intentions with Abraham. Now the two of them, God was giving direction, and Abraham also saw a need to express himself to God. And there was a friendship between those two. And you know, because of that, Abraham's response by telling God all his thoughts and all of his feelings about the situation he was in, he felt free to express himself to God. And in prayer, we should have that same feeling. That we can go to God as a friend. That we can open up to him with things that weigh us down. Things that we've burdened down with. Whether it's a sin. Whether it's a problem. Whether it's an obstacle that's in our way. Something that's holding us back. A relationship that is a real strain on us. And we can go to God and open up to him. And he'll hear our prayer. Because of that friendship. But I think Jesus gives us the best example of friendship. as we saw, I can see in John, the 15th chapter and verse 13, greater love has no man than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. Ye are my friends, if you do whatever I command you. Jesus was willing to lay down his life because of his love and his friendship with us. For those that obeyed his will, he so freely and willingly was willing to go to the cross that day. A great example. We're not asked to lay our lives down. And I'd say the majority of us will never be asked to do that. But you know, to be able, as I said, to offer our time, our efforts, our support, just being there is so critical and so insignificant to one laying their life down. And so God has asked of us to give. And yet, sometimes we deem that the hardest. Friendships also should never expect something in return. Genuine friendships loves not what they're going to get back for what they do, but a friendship gives because they care about the other one. They care about that other individual. And I think real friends look at the heart and not just the package. They look at the person involved and they overlook the faults. They overlook those things because they have love that's unconditional, just like Jesus had towards us. But we also need to ask for or seek friends that speak the truth. You know, genuine Christian friendship also means being truthful, even if at times it can hurt. I think we have to be sensitive, but we also have to recognize that no one's perfect. Jesus calls us his friends and he laid down his life for us, but we weren't perfect, or he wouldn't have laid down his life that day. And so we have to recognize the fact that there are those elements that we may not agree with, but we, out of friendship, we need to recognize the value of the soul and the heart and the friendship of another individual. True Christian friendship is a sign of God's presence in us too. You know, if we have a friendship that bonds us together with another, it will affect the people around us as they will look to us. And I think about it in those college years. Whenever you have a friend and others can see that friendship and the way you interact and the things you do together and the way that you talk to one another, those things stand out. People see that because they recognize the fact that you do care. It's not superficial. Friendships are really a rare commodity in this world, what I would call true friendships. Because a true friend is someone that we can share our thoughts, our closest secrets, feel comfortable talking to at any time. It is someone that we might ask for their opinion because we know they will tell us what they think and not just what they think we want to hear. It is someone that laughs when we laugh and cries when we cry and shares our good times and also our bad. There was an old proverb that reads this way. The beauty of being at peace with another, neither having to weigh thoughts or measure words, but spilling them out just as they are, chaff and grain together. Certain that a faithful hand will keep what is worth keeping, and with a breath of kindness blow the rest away. So important to have a friend that is willing to be able to just talk. And yet some of the things that may be a little harsh, the receiving friend can dissect those things and take those things for what they are. When David and Jonathan met, they became friends at once. Their friendship is one of the deepest, the closest recorded in the Bible. And they based their friendship on a commitment to God and not just on one another. They let nothing come between them. And you know, as I said earlier, just the fact that Jonathan knew that even though that being king, he was the heir to that, he recognized that David would fill that role. And yet he did not allow that to tear down a friendship. And you know, many times, friendships, when they're tested, become stronger. And Jonathan and David remain friends even to the end. Going back into 1 Samuel, the 23rd chapter, we learn that Jonathan did realize the fact that he was not going to be that heir. In 1 Samuel 23 and verse 17, it says, "And he said to him, Fear not, for the hand of Saul my father shall not find thee, and thou shalt be king over Israel, and I shall be next unto thee. And that also Saul my father knoweth. And they too made a covenant before the Lord. And David abode in the woods, and Jonathan went to his house." Those two worked together because of a friendship. They talked openly. Jonathan helped David along the way. And that bond, even though Jonathan knew his father was wrong, doesn't mean that he didn't love his father as a father, but he loved God. And he loved that relationship that he had with David. And because of that, he recognized what God was blessing David with. As I said, true friendships are a rarity in this world. Some can be false because they base their friendship upon worldly goods or worldly pleasures. And we need to be careful with those type of friendships. But recognize that true friendships are those that can be proved and supported through the Scriptures. This concludes my comments this morning on this particular thought. We don't want to close the services, though, without extending the Lord's invitation. If there's one this morning that's subject to the gospel call, we bid you to come while we